Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Welcome to Monday. Meatloaf Monday, we like to say around here. We got meatloaf. I tell you what, we got a meatloaf sound effect. Just play it. I like it.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
My favorite part is he's just asking in case he has to tell a doctor. JP's on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. And so I went home this past weekend and had some my mom's meatloaf. And she sent me back with some. So, you know what? Tonight on a Meatloaf Monday, I'll be having some meatloaf.
Was it everything you remembered it being?
Man, my mom makes the best meatloaf ever. Nice. I know everybody says that, but mine's actually true.
Okay, good. I'm glad for you. Hey, we got a great show laid on for you today at 3 o'clock. I'm sorry, 4 o'clock today. At 4 o'clock, the Public Service Commission. Do you know what that is? Does anybody out there know what the Public Service Commission is?
I hadn't heard of it.
You actually run for office for this. The Public Service Commission is the body of elected officials that regulate the utilities in the state of Alabama. And they have to approve things like rate changes and all that stuff. So yeah, the PSC is actually pretty important. And I got a whole section of stuff today about things like that. So we're going to talk to the PSC president, Twinkle Cavanaugh. Twinkle Cavanaugh has been around the Alabama politics scene for a number of years. I've known her for over a decade. She's a great person, but she is also the PSC president, and we'll talk to her at 4 o'clock today. And then I've got a whole triple dipper full of stuff, so just hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, True the Vote. True the Vote. Could we please true up the vote? Can we get this finalized? Why are we several weeks down the line? Like, I believe that tomorrow is going to be 3 weeks since the election, am I right? Why are we several weeks down the line and there are actually votes still being counted? Are we a third world country? Oh no, they do a better job than we do. So yeah, we're going to talk about it. True the vote and what races are still outstanding. You might want to know because it does impact our majority. Number two on the Triple Dipper, keeping the lights on. All right, in conjunction with that conversation with PSC President Twinkle Cavanaugh, we're going to be talking about what happens when blue policies get involved in state matters related to electricity and other sources of energy. Because, y'all, it is unstinking believable. And it shouldn't be this way. But right now, what we're watching is sort of like we've got almost centralized control in some ways. All right, we're going to talk about that. Keeping the lights on is the name of the second dipper. And I've got all kinds of stuff you might want to know about how it impacts you and your electric bill. And then number three, race baiters and charlatans. You know, every once in a while I got to do a segment on this. Race baiters and charlatans. Oh, man, they're out there. They are shameless. And I've even got audio clips, the kind that's going to curl your hair and make you wonder how those people ever got elected into office. Race baiters and charlatans, that's number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, well, let me jump on in here to the Right Side Way monologue for this Thanksgiving Day week Monday. So I'll go ahead and be honest. I'm about to make some of you mad. I feel confident, at least those of you that consider yourselves fiscal conservatives. So last week I did a monologue about the Pentagon failing its seventh audit in a row with an inability to count or to account for over $824 billion in materiel, equipment, and funds. $824 billion. It's an epic failure. So if you care where your tax dollars go and what they go for, stand by. Because for the next few minutes, I want to talk about liberal big government views on money. Your money, to be exact. Money that taxpayers have contributed to the greater cause. Money that on one hand is held against us and used sometimes to coerce the enforcement of an agenda from D.C., while at the same time our tax dollars are used and abused without accountability. Failing audits by the same people who then try to coerce our behavior with it. It's an odd measure of what I'm calling fiscal hypocrisy. But let me first set the stage by telling you a story. It's actually a memory. It's one that some of y'all can probably relate to. So when I was a kid, roughly middle school age, my dad was an Army officer. We were stationed in London, England. So one summer, it worked out that I could come back to the States to visit family and stay for the summer. Sounds good, right? Yeah. So as a 12 or 13-year-old kid, I boarded a plane by myself and flew from London's Heathrow International to LaGuardia and from there to Birmingham, Alabama. Now, y'all, I have had enough adventures as a well-traveled adult moving around crowded airports. I look back now, though, and I cannot believe that I was let loose as a middle schooler to find my way across international waters with changeovers in major airports. All I knew to do was get off at LaGuardia, find an information booth, and ask how to get to my next gate. Anyway, there I was, probably looking lost as a coot, just a kid, walking the terminal, staring up at the signs. All of a sudden, somebody grabbed my arm. I looked over, and there was this booth of, like, basically hippies wearing robes. So back then, it was actually common for the airports to allow special interest groups to set up shop in small booths and try to solicit travelers. And I kid you not, it was a four-sided waist-high square about 10 by 10, and there were at least half a dozen Moonies standing in the square. For those who don't remember, that's a cult that was led by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. They were like all the rage back in the 60s and 70s. And one of them had this unsuspecting teenager, me, traveling alone by the arm. Now, I didn't know what she wanted, but man, she was into it, telling me all the amazing things their cult did, how she could sell me some of their beautifully decorated books. Would I please make a donation? This went on for like 10 minutes with her holding my arm and me like trying to pull away, knowing that I had to get to a gate somewhere on the backside of Egypt. And here I was, a kid. Well, here's the end result. As a kid, this grown woman who should have known better finally let go of my arm when I handed her a $20 bill. I know what you're thinking. Me thinking at the time I was just glad to be free of her. Maybe I did a good thing. Maybe I gave money to charity or something. Also knowing that I didn't have time to understand it. Nobody was there to explain it. To say that my parents later on were upset, not at me, is an understatement. Well, let me tell you, what I just described is what liberal politicians try to do to us every day. It's as if we're all the unwitting traveler and all the liberals in D.C. are a bunch of money-grubbing Moonies with an agenda. I mean, if you'll do what we say, we'll let go of your arm. So we give them our money, and they make promises. But in the end, what have they really done? They've just injected themselves further into our lives. There are several stories, by the way, from the headlines over the past few years of the Biden administration that give me specific cause to be able to say these things. I see specific evidence of arm grabbing, if you know what I mean. So, like, here's the thing. We saw how the Biden administration doubled down on their efforts to remake society. It's as if their whole of government approach to everything liberal and culturally progressive had a sense of desperation to it, like they knew they had to get it all done before the first term ran out. In the course of doing so, they looked around for any place in which the unwitting taxpayer might get trapped and have no choice but to yield to their agenda if they could hold dollar signs over their head. Kind of like a kid traveling by himself dealing with money-grubbing Moonies, right? Case in point number one. Did you know that during the Biden administration that federal funds for free and reduced lunches to underprivileged children in public schools were actually being held hostage to a woke agenda? You heard me. The Biden Department of Agriculture, knowing full well that the states have become dependent on funding to help feed children who might not otherwise get a full meal at home, those children targeted by the Biden administration for the loss of funds. What? Yes, funds for those meals that kids relied on. Hungry kids. Unless the states would adopt the Biden administration's rules and policies related to sexual orientation and gender identity. Aha! It was all part of the effort to force a redirection on the gender wars. It's a new policy, guidance from the USDA, which is the agency, by the way, more responsible for food security than anything else, announced that schools must accept the new policy of mandating that transgender use of bathrooms and other such nonsense would be accepted. If not, if the school wouldn't do it, if the school system declined, then guess what? Withholding of any funds from the federal government to include things like food aid for baby formula, school lunches, and community food banks would follow. Fox News called it food security blackmail. Here's another one of the Moonies at the government grabbing your arm. Case number two. The Heritage Foundation identified a regulation that was buried deep inside of a 1,036-page renewed Medicare regulation, promulgated by the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services back in 2022. Apparently, the regulation buried deep inside the regs is being referred to as the new anti-racism rule. It's a requirement that any medical provider who treats Medicare patients, which is a lot of them, must create and implement an anti-racism plan for their office. A plan that has to include targeted goals and milestones to prevent and address racism and provide ongoing anti-racism training in order to best identify the implicit biases that the Biden administration is so sure exists in all of healthcare. So what we have now is the government inserting itself into the actual business practice of medical providers, demanding they acquiesce to their systemic biases and privileges, take the white privilege walk, if you will, holding doctors by the arm, basically, until they give in. If you're not mad already, I'll give you one more. Case in point number three. Do you remember the massive infrastructure spending bill? $1.2 trillion. Taxpayer dollars. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, he announced the strong-arming of states and local governments to spend those infrastructure dollars on, yep, progressive pet projects. Things like climate-resilient public transit and bike paths, mandating that old roads had to be repaired before new ones could be built, regardless of whether the old roads are what the locals really needed. Buttigieg's leadership has even resulted most recently in threats to state governments of the loss of transportation dollars unless they start to prioritize matters related to pedestrians and bicyclists. Really. Transportation dollars are there to build roads and bridges, not bike paths. All of this despite the fact that the express language of the spending bill actually prevents such monetary coercion. Look, what we've been seeing, and hear me get back to my point, what we've been seeing is the most advanced case of the weaponization of money in perhaps, I don't know, ever. Most folks never see it. Those that do are often too fearful that if they don't comply, they're going to be at a loss. And to be honest with you, the federal government is known for adding stringers. It just is. But rarely have we seen it at such a blatant, progressive, agenda-driven level. Elected officials and bureaucrats who would stoop to this level of revenue-based coercion, they're no better than Moonies in an airport grubbing money off unsuspected teenage travelers. It's the weaponization of money, I kid you not. It's just plain wrong. But as the federal government is careful with our tax dollars when they conduct business, I mean, if you're going to mandate behaviors and place regulatory burdens on us, it must mean that, oh, I don't know, maybe it's because you're really responsible. You're the one who leads by example, right? No. Like I told you, the Pentagon just failed its seventh straight audit. $824 billion missing. Well, that's an unmitigated fiscal hypocrisy. The same government that demands we conform to their liberal agendas or lose funds, they don't have accountability of many of the funds we send them. Look, we can't have a tiered layer of accountability where the little guy just takes it on the chin while the big guy laughs on C-SPAN and gets a big retirement bonus when they leave office. There's an old saying, you cannot expect what you don't inspect. I do expect that the Pentagon is going to be inspected a lot in the years to come, but the bottom line is this. The weaponization of money is wrong. Coercion is coercion, whether it's committed by organized crime or government. If the government's going to grab us by the arm, take our dollars unless we comply, well, shouldn't we be allowed some kind of reciprocal ability then to call for accountability for their spending? It's only right. But unfortunately, it's too often more about fiscal hypocrisy, less about good government. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, that whole thing with the Pentagon last week got me all stirred up. And I looked back over this and I got to thinking, now wait a minute, we couldn't get away with that. They can lose money, they can lose material, they can lose weapons, they can lose all that. And they just expected to be like, well, that, you know, doesn't mean something went wrong. Yes, it does. Meanwhile, we're told if you want those dollars you're used to getting, you got to change your behavior. That's coercion. That ain't nothing more than a bunch of Moonies in an airport grabbing a kid by the arm and trying to extort money. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. We are back. The text lines are open. Some of y'all figured that out already. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. And by the way, those of y'all that are streaming online, watching the show, you know, like live in studio cameras, the whole deal, you can get it in all kinds of places. But I will say this, we had a bit of a gaffe on the website. So everything else was streaming, but what was the deal? New camera or what?
No, it was, well, there is a new camera, but
there's a new camera. It's a fancy new camera.
Yeah. The, the link on the website was not working, but that's been fixed. So if you were having issues streaming on the website, if you go back, it will be fixed on there. So
the amazing thing is the new camera makes me look 5 pounds lighter and 6 years younger. I don't know how that works, but I really like the new camera.
Yeah, there you go. And then we're also we're streaming on X and Twitch and Rumble as well. So if you want to go check us out on those platforms as well. And nice. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter if you're watching on there.
Nice. Nice. Good job, all of it. Yeah, and by the way, yeah, he made the point about the follow. It means a lot to us. If you would, that'd be great, because we are pushing our company into growth mode, and part of that means you have to hit certain levels on the different media platforms that we're on in order to be able to do it. But yeah, we're everywhere. Got a lot of good things going on. Text lines, let's see what we got here. David from Bucky says, JP, how'd your picks look after Saturday's game? Oh, JP, did I mention to you? War Eagle. Hey, did I say that yet?
You did when you walked in. I think I got 4 picks right on the list. Boomer, I think, got 5 right. So, yeah,
it was a strange weekend.
It was upset filled weekend for sure.
It was proof that we have a portal and NIL.
Yeah,
I think. Yes. I think that's part of it. And I also think it's. Did you see what Saban said about Jordan-Hare Stadium?
It's haunted.
It's haunted.
Right.
Yeah, he's right.
He's correct. I'm glad that he acknowledged that too.
What do you say? Something like if he'd had a chance to talk to Texas A&M before the game, he would have said, be careful, that place is haunted.
Yep, exactly. So the way that we've lost and then also the ways that we've won there, it's haunted.
it's you can't predict. But I'll be honest with you, as an Auburn fan, and what's crazy is it's kind of like election night. I actually fell asleep. I was in the final 2 minutes of the game, and I was done in, man. I'd been up since like 5 o'clock Saturday morning, and I just it's one of those where you fell asleep and didn't know you fell asleep until you woke up and realized the game was over. Like, what happened? So I pulled up my internet real quick, and I'm like, we did what?
Yeah.
4 overtimes.
Yeah. That's it is crazy that, a team like Texas A&M can go down to a team, with Auburn who's been struggling all year. It's the new era of college football. It's chaos every week.
It's madness. It's Alabama and Vandy. It's Auburn, Texas A&M. And what really shocked me was they said that Auburn has a chance at a bowl now. And I what?
If they win the Iron Bowl, they're bowl eligible.
Crazy. Crazy. Iron Bowl.
Yep.
Okay.
Everybody was talking about an Alabama game this past weekend. I don't know what they're talking about. Alabama's playing basketball tomorrow night, so I don't even know what they're mentioning about that.
Let's get there. All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I'm talking about. Y'all, this one, Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. By the way, and I realize there is an age gap between us. I sit here with JP. Mm-hmm. There is indeed an age gap.
Just a bit.
Just a tad. I just learned that he has never watched WKRP in Cincinnati. So, therefore, you are also not aware of the infamous, delightful, holiday-oriented scene in which we learned that turkeys cannot fly. You have not.
Mm-mm.
All right, we're gonna be playing this in a minute. I've got it right here. I'm looking at it. It's absolutely one of the most classic scenes of TV sitcom history. WKRP in Cincinnati. It's a radio thing, so you'd appreciate that.
Yeah,
yeah. Johnny Fever, turning the tables on WKRP in Cincinnati. But anyway, yeah, they do a little radio station demo where they're going to drop turkeys to people from helicopters. It didn't work out that well.
I can't imagine why.
No, it got pretty ugly. All right, so we're gonna have to actually play that. Text message real quick before I get into my stuff. David from Madison. Okay, he must have seen the Right Side Report is our daily newsletter that goes out. If you want to get the Right Side Report, what a great segue. Thank you, David. If you want to get the Right Side Report, just text the word newsletter to the same number that you text the word newsletter to the same number you text in for the show, 833-68-RIGHT. It'll give you a link. You can sign up, get our daily Right Side Report. Anyway, David said, stuffing is inside the bird, dressing is outside the bird. Thank you. Thank you, David. I appreciate that. The question was, which do you prefer? And I get why he said that, because I think the way did Butters put that together? I guess Butters put together the Thanksgiving week survey as which do you prefer, the stuffing from inside the bird, the stuffing from outside the bird. He's clarifying, it's dressing. Thank you, David. Sharp shooting.
I didn't even know that difference, though. So there you go. You learn something new every day.
Just saying. Roy from Hartsell, thank you very much. We got the online fixed. We appreciate it. Jeff from Indiana says, doing a little dirty work today. Maybe Pete Buttigieg should come build me a road to my dirt pile so I couldn't get hung up. What you got going on? He's out there moving heavy dirt. He's got the real man job going today. Appreciate you, Jeff. John from Huntsville says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, just want to say that off the bench was amazing on Saturday because JP had not only right side ruffian guest picker, he had two right side ruffian guest pickers. And then my day got even better when Auburn upset Texas A&M. There you go. In four overtimes after they blew a 21-point lead. I was worried. So, I mean, just to be honest with you, I was watching all the way to the last couple of minutes, and I was really thinking Auburn was about to do Auburn again. And because they went and they had 24 unanswered points after just dominating the first half. I mean, Thorne looked like a real quarterback for the first half.
Yeah, they had to make things interesting.
Thank you.
They had to make it worth the watch. So.
It's just so unnecessary, fellas. Just so unnecessary. All right, let me jump on into Dipper number one here. I'm calling it True the Vote. True the Vote. What am I talking about? Well, just so you know, there's people out there right now still trying to true up the vote in some places. How can that be? Like I said, are we a third world country? Well, the third world countries apparently do a better job, at least some of them. But we do have some news. So in Pennsylvania, Senator Bob Casey, the Democrat, just conceded the race, I think, on Friday. So basically they were in a mandatory recount. He had a right to ask for a recount. However, it was pretty clear he was not going to get there. And they were looking at provisionals, but there were not enough provisionals to overcome the gap. Even if he had won all of them. So all that to say, NBC News had already projected the Republican, Dave McCormick, to win, but Casey was still pushing for the automatic recount, which he had a right to withdraw from that, and then he did. So the Democrats out. Casey was dealt a blow on Monday also, it says, when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ordered election officials in the state to stop counting mail-in ballots marked with the wrong date. Now, if you didn't hear, that's part of why I got this story. This one came from NBC. True the Vote. Amazing to me, first of all, that there are people still counting votes in some states, and we are 3 weeks past the election. 3 weeks. They don't have COVID as an excuse. They don't have, you know, civil unrest as an excuse. We're not at war. They don't have anything in the hopper except, well, we do a lot of mail-in ballots, and that's kind of hard to work with. Well, then maybe you ought to rethink the whole mail-in ballot shenanigans you got going on. But in Pennsylvania, they went one step further. After the election, after being told by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that you cannot count ballots that are not put together correctly. In other words, they have to be done in a certain way. You can't just say, well, we'll take them because they got here. No, they can't have the wrong date on them. They can't come in at the wrong time. And they can't be missing signatures. And at some point, Bucks County especially, which is, you know, the center of all the controversy in Pennsylvania, it feels like, they actually announced that they were going to, well, we're going to pursue it anyway because we think we should. And their Supreme Court had to step in and put the kibosh on it. That's when the Democrat finally conceded. So let's picture that. I mean, and right now it looks like Senator Bob Casey's being the bigger man. He's actually conceding the race. No, he thought he had something going on with counting votes that weren't supposed to be counted. And when they stopped that, he realized he had nowhere to go. Was it a close race? Yeah. But he was not going to get there unless he got the illicit votes. And when suddenly their Supreme Court said, I mean, literally, the Democrat Supreme Court of Pennsylvania pretty much told the election officials of the state, we've already told you about this and we're not going to tell you again. You can't count them. Period. It changed things. How about this? What House seats are we still waiting on? You may be shocked to find out we're waiting on a few, like several. CBS News, Dateline Friday. I take it back, Dateline Thursday. More than 2 weeks after Election Day 2024, the results in a handful of races for the U.S. House of Representatives are still outstanding. You're looking at 2.5 weeks at that point, and we still have House races that have not been decided. Now, are they close? Yes. But is that really the only excuse? No. So here's the three that we're still waiting on. Two of them from California, one from Iowa. Now, Iowa, they're looking at right now, the Republican is winning, but Lord, it's close. With 99% of all the votes counted, they were only separated by 801 on a statewide basis. I'm sorry, on a congressional district basis. That's pretty significant. But they do believe it's leaning Republican, but they have not called the race yet because they're probably going to be in automatic recount territory. Then there's California. California's 13th congressional district. The freshman GOP representative John Duarte is leading the Democrat Adam Gray by a mere 227 votes. That's like, y'all, that's beyond margin of error. That's like hard to even conceive it being that close. But 97% of the votes in. This is a repeat race, by the way. They ran against each other 2 years ago. And then there's California's 45th district. They've only got 92% of the vote in. Only 92%. They have 8% left to count. The GOP rep, Michelle Steele, and Democrat Derek Tran. Tran is ahead by 314 votes. It's just, you look at it and go, wow. But as much as that's bad, think about this. They just finally decided Alaska, and then one from California, one from Ohio, one from Maine, another from California, Arizona, another from California, and one from Oregon. Those got decided last week. There's no good excuse for this. This is absolutely an indication that what we're looking at is states making it way too hard, way too cumbersome, and it destroys not only the sense of integrity in the vote, it destroys the public trust in the vote. When we start seeing things taking this long, all we can imagine is how many things are going wrong in there intentionally. Like, why are they taking, what are they adding? What are they trying to get away with? Why are they doing it this way? Truing up the vote means, I mean, it's California law. I get it. And I do believe that the state should have a right to say so. But maybe at some point they ought to be a little embarrassed. Just maybe a tad. Because here's the thing, and I'll say this before the break. I got a piece from Newsweek. Phil, did you go to Newsweek? I did. Newsweek. 16 days after the election. This story came out on Friday. 16 days after the election. California says it only has 315,000 more votes left to process.
Only.
Only. Actually, it's in capital letters. Only. Got to put it in all caps. Only. California's the most populous state, 39 million residents, 16 million of them voted. So that basically means they're like only like 2% of the votes still left to be counted. Doesn't matter. And they like to say there's still hundreds of thousands of votes left to do it. And they like to say it's because there's so many. No, it's also because you conduct so much of your election by mail. And everything you do by mail requires additional hand certifications. Each ballot has to be individually validated, individually processed. They have to compare the signatures. They have to make sure that an ID was present. I take it back. It's California. No ID required. California Assemblyman Joe Patterson, who's a Republican, told a Sacramento TV station that their slow election laws do sow distrust in the system, and we need more confidence. He said, just because it's been a problem a long time doesn't mean we can't solve it or shouldn't solve it. Hello, amen. Final results. Guess when they're going to certify the results. But by the way, you can count them and release them, but until they're certified, they're not done. And that's every state. But guess when, November 5th was the election day. Guess when California projects being able to certify their vote?
I hope before January 20th.
Well, yes.
Fingers crossed.
That's a good answer. December 13th.
Wow.
December 13th. That's 6 weeks, 5 weeks after the election. Even the Washington Post called him out. Even the Washington Post looked at him and said, California. for the love of God. California, they said, Washington Post says they are failing to achieve timeliness and clarity results, leading to the erosion of already low public confidence in elections. You think? All right, listen, when we get back from this break, though, I'm going to tell you, true the vote. Is there a solution? And did Elon Musk just call out another country as doing a better job than California? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I just sent JP the audio for for the WKRP in Cincinnati Classic Thanksgiving Week special, and we may play that at the top of the hour. I just listen. I may be calling an audible here. We're gonna throw a trick play in on it and just call this the flea flicker. We're gonna do it, man. You good with that?
It works with me.
I feel like I may have played that at some point in the past for Thanksgiving Week. We have to play it like every day this week. Just throw it in there, just for fun. All right, I'll finish up this dipper I'm doing right now on True the Vote. So California can't find their backside with both hands, right? They are struggling right now like a submarine with a screen door. It makes no sense whatsoever the way California's elections are overly complicated. And they're overly complicated because they're overly trying to make sure that it's just made there for every. Guess what? We have great voter turnout in Alabama, and we get the results back on the same day. I realize we don't have 39 million people, of which 16 million vote. I get that. I mean, we're literally one-fourth the size. However, you can do better. You know why I know that? Because you've done better for decades until recently when they began to change their laws. Interesting dynamic here. And I got some thoughts on this, so don't see this as me saying that's the way to go. But Elon Musk, I got a piece from the Economic Times of India. Economic Times of India, Phil? Yes, I did. Economic Times of India. 640 million votes counted in one day. I saw the look on your face. 640 million votes counted in one day in the Indian elections.
That's nuts. I don't think they have mail-in ballots or anything.
Well,
like,
I'm pretty sure they don't.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They have a great voter turnout. Mm-hmm. I mean, massive voter turnout. And they are one of the most populous nations in the world. And they are, while they are not a true third world country, parts of them are a third world country. Elon Musk has drawn attention to the efficiency of India's election system, contrasting it with California's prolonged vote counting process in the U.S. presidential election. Musk praised India for counting 640 million votes in a single day, while California continues to tally its ballots nearly 3 weeks after polling. Here's the deal. Now, I want to make sure I'm clear on this. I do not want centralized control of our voting. I don't. I want the states to maintain their local say, all right? And we should. I think the Constitution requires it. I think that the 10th Amendment to the Constitution also enables it. And I think that that's just the way it should be. I do believe there is room for correction. I don't see anything wrong with criteria being applied that then is implemented at the state level. Things like there will be a voting day. There will be a voting age. There will be a voter ID requirement. What's wrong with that? We don't have that one in there. The other two I named are already there. We already have voting day appointed by the federal government, states administer. We already have voting age in the Constitution, states administer. I think we ought to go ahead and add to it that there will be a voter ID nationwide. States administer it. How are they going to accomplish that, states? It's up to you. Now, some will say, that's an unfunded mandate. It's really not, because they already issue driver's licenses. It's already a part of the process they live by. Okay, then there's the other thing. How about, and you will no longer do mail-in balloting? Oh, no. You can do absentee like they've always done. You can have special circumstances. We will not allow ballot harvesting. We will not allow massive mail-in balloting. And we will certainly not allow external collection boxes that can be gerrymandered, trashed, picked up, stuffed. Because every time they do that, the only way to solve the problem is to put a camera on it and watch it 24/7. I mean, it makes no sense. You increase the cost of elections by trying to do the things they do. So the states can still administer their laws accordingly. The states can still have their own boards of registrars and all the things it takes to register people and to clear their voter rolls and do all that stuff. But they will have to do it with certain criteria. India does not do that. And I don't care for this. India's success, according to the article I've got here, is in its centralized management by an election commission of India. In other words, it's nationally controlled. I don't care for that. They oversee their elections and provide real-time updates on trends. I don't mind that. I'm fine with that. Electronic voting machines. Electronic voting machines streamline the counting processes, enabling faster results. If you ask me, I'd love to go back to a stubby pencil and a piece of paper. Just saying. But it says the contrast between India and California highlights significant differences in election management and technology adoption. India's centralized system allows for consistency. The problem is this. India's centralized system, you got to be careful. It also allows for massive corruption. Because then the corruption can be centralized into one place. That's the problem. That being said, California, you can still do a better job. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. I think we might do some turkey flying right after the break. Phil Williams and JP will be back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on Meatloaf Monday of Thanksgiving week. All right, so it's Thanksgiving week. I think I did this at some point in the last several years. I don't know when, but it's like I'd forgotten about it. And every time we get to Thanksgiving week, somewhere in there, I get reminded of one of the most classic clips from sitcom history. So JP, so you've never seen WKRP in Cincinnati?
Nope.
Okay. This came out in the 70s. All right. I get it. It's old.
Mm-hmm.
It's also hilarious.
Yeah.
And I look at this thinking, okay, I run the risk right now of this being really funny to me. But so the baseline of the story is WKRP is this little radio station. It's family owned. It's struggling to sort of stay afloat. It's got some major characters. Lonnie Anderson was the secretary for the place. They had a black guy named Venus Flytrap, and Venus Flytrap spun the disco tunes in the evening. And then Johnny Fever, he's the DJ for the classic rock. Anyway, and they had this huckster who was in charge of marketing, who always came up with huckster ideas to promo the station. And then Les Nessman was this little nebbish of a guy with, you know, little mealy mouth kind of guy that liked to tell the news the way it is, you know. So they came up with this. We're gonna play this clip. I got to. If it goes over well, we might play it every day this week. But so the deal was, WKRP decided it was going to do a special, a giveaway, something to promo the station and give something back to their listeners at a local shopping mall. And things didn't go that well. And Les Nessman is on the scene reporting live as to what happens. And you've got the clip. So picture this. They're in the station, listen to him broadcast live. Here it is.
Now, it's a helicopter. And it's coming this way.
A helicopter?
It's flying something behind it. I can't quite make it out. It's a large banner. And it says, Happy Thanksgiving. WKRP. What a sight, ladies and gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter.
Oh, no.
It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver coming to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. No parachutes yet.
Can't be skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but
oh my God, they're talking! Oh, they're crashing
Running around pushing each other. Oh my goodness! Oh, the humanity! Oh, people are running about. The turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this anymore. No, I can't go in there.
Children are searching for their mothers, and oh, not since the Hindenburg tragedy has there been anything like that. I don't know how much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny. The crowd.
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. Who just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live film at 11.
Keep it going. We've got more.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Save that audio, brother. We're going to have to play that again. So, oh God, that just makes me like tear up laughing hard. So you've never seen that before. I've just made your Thanksgiving week.
Yep.
I don't care what kind of meatloaf your mom made. I don't care what you're going to have for Thanksgiving. You have now been inducted into the WKRP I Thought Turkeys Could Fly moment.
You know, maybe we should. No, we should not do that.
No. There will not be a right side bombing of a local. Okay. Yeah. Brian from Huntsville wants us to make sure we understand that wild turkeys fly quite well. Up for 300 yards, he says. Okay. Domestic turkeys often fly into low tree limbs. That said, WKRP turkeys drop is hilarious. Yes. Yes, it is. Jay from Killen says, agreed, Phil. Funniest clip in TV history. And what's so funny is the part where, I mean, all that with Les Nessman is hilarious, the play-by-play. But then when the boss comes in, whose name escapes me at the moment, I'll think of it in a minute. But when he comes in and just stares at everybody, you can't see it on the radio, obviously, but he's got feathers stuck all over him and he's all disheveled. He goes, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. And he just turns around and walks out of the room. David from Bucky's has texted and he says, Phil, why did they get rid of the voting booths, the tie voting booths? What? You went in, closed the curtain for privacy and cast your votes using levers. That I thought those worked pretty well. Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. I have no idea, brother. Maybe they were more expensive. I don't know what to say. But the reality is I don't mind having a paper ballot.
That makes too much sense.
It just
does. Of course you can't do that.
Just stop trying to make sense. That's awful. And then he says, by the way, David from Bucky says, I feel I remember watching the original broadcast of WKRP. He says, I still laugh every time I watch or hear this. Thomas from Athens says, I saw that WKRP episode several times and what funny TV series. By the way, he says, WKRP seems like KRP was a good choice for that station. I don't know what that means. Oh, Karine Jean-Pierre, is that what he's trying to point out? Gary from Decatur says, just reinforcement of the premise that government workers, federal or state, will never be held accountable for their job responsibilities as long as politicians refuse to exercise their oversight responsibility to the voters. Can't make them work, can't fire them. I don't think that's the problem, Gary, I'll be honest with you. I mean, if you got 16 million votes and half of them come in by this jackleg mail-in system that require each one to then be individually opened, handled by someone, and processed, and then that somebody then enters into the system what they saw. I mean, you got layers of potential for trouble here, but you also got layers of potential for delay. So, I mean, I don't know. The bottom line is do away with the ridiculous mail-in system of balloting. It just, my gosh. KB from Hartsel says, I remember that episode of WKRP, exclamation points. I had to pull over because I was laughing so hard. One of the best clips ever. Thank you, KB. I tell you what, brother, just hang on to that clip. We may play it more this week.
We got it on standby now.
We got it on standby. It's just good. All right. More to come on that one. So we're going to, coming up in this next segment, and go ahead and brace yourselves for, you know, like getting mad. but at the same time, do take heart in the fact that some of the things I'm going to describe to you, Alabama has resisted. What am I talking about? Keeping the lights turned on. It is amazing to me how much the federal government has attempted to retool our economy. literally retool our economy by providing agenda-driven economics as opposed to, you know, things that actually make sense. In this case, I'm talking about utilities. Now, Alabama rates feel like they just went up and like it's high. You might be surprised to find out that Alabama's rates are, you know, right smack in the middle. Like we're maybe even a little better than normal. We're like number 30 to the good in terms of our rates compared to other states. But that's because our state has chosen to resist the epic push for all of the green energy portfolio. You know, in California, they're shutting down coal plants and they're not ready for it yet. We're going to sustainable energy solutions, they say. They're not that sustainable. And they also can't, the grid can't handle it. So here they are relying upon wind and solar more and more and more. And I get it. If it works, okay. The problem is they're not as reliable. They don't produce to the extent that they need to. And all they should be doing is supplementing an existing system with an all-of-the-above policy. Alabama has an all-of-the-above. So I'm going to walk through some things that just came out of a Heritage Foundation. Is it Heritage? Yeah, Heritage Foundation study that compares red states to blue states. And you may be not so surprised to learn that the red states fare a lot better when it comes to energy production because we don't buy into all of the agenda-driven regulatory burdens that the federal government keeps trying to impose. All right, about to head to the break. Before I do that, I got to read a couple more texts real quick. John from Huntsville says, Phil, the best episode of WKRP in Cincinnati was the annual softball game against their rival radio. That was a good one. That was a good one. Danny from Decatur says, Mr. Carlson. That's right. Mr. Carlson was the boss at WKRP. Thank you very much. And then a Brit from Athens sends me, I don't know what you're sending me here. Picture of Godzilla, and it says, when you're attacking Cincinnati, some guy throws turkeys out of a helicopter. Okay. All right, listen, we're taking a break right now. I love that scene, man. WKRP, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. If I were a character in that, I'd rather be the Johnny Fever. I don't want to be Mr. Carlson. Just because I have Right Side Media doesn't mean I have to be Mr. Carlson. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. All right, we're going to number two on the Triple Dipper called Keeping the Lights On. And this is an economic discussion, all right? And I'll be honest with you, the economy has ranked consistently as either number one or two across the board for the entire presidential election cycle. And it should. People often say that, you know, you remember, what's his name, the mouth of the South, James Carville. He said so famously back during the Clinton era, it's the economy, stupid. What he's trying to say is if people can't buy bacon, they vote accordingly. Well, there's also the fact that there's every reason to believe that Trump is going to change the economy. Now, Phil, can one person really make that big a difference? Friggin' right they can. If they have the power, the will, and the authority to do it, he did it before. Now, this time, there are several factors in play that are believed to be coming in that are bringing a great deal of optimism that has not been there for quite some time. For the last 4 years, we have been in a mode in which government was willing to regulate things into non-existence regardless of what it did to our economy. Case in point is the auto industry. The auto industry got ransacked by the Biden administration. Ransacked. And then there's the fact that we spent billions and billions of dollars plussing up a green energy sector that could not survive on its own. Now, again, I don't care if somebody wants windmills. I don't care if somebody wants solar. Just understand, don't try to push that on us like it's the only thing that works, because it doesn't. Well, it's just better for the environment than a coal-fired plant. Do you know what it takes to build and maintain one wind turbine? Do you know how much petroleum product it takes to build one? Do you? And then maintain it, and then lubricate it, and then, you know, get over there in a combustion engined helicopter to service it, or to climb up in it and do things to it that are necessary to keep it going in cold weather when a coal-fired plant would not have shut down? All that to say, the green energy sector can't survive without the other aspects of energy generation. Now, energy is also, listen, I'll be honest with you, it's the economy. So much of what we do and spend and why we have to spend is tied to the energy sector. I'm going to get to that in a minute. Let me tell you this, though. I came across a piece on Fox Business, Dateline today, that is one of the most upbeat things I've seen, and it doesn't feel glossy. It's not one of those like trying to, blow smoke, hey, it's all going to be good, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It doesn't feel that way. This one has the air of authenticity attached to it. It's the most heartening thing I've read about the pending economy in quite a while. Fox Business, Dateline today, starts off by saying, as President-elect Donald Trump prepares to retake the White House in January, the National Association of Business Economics is more optimistic on the outlook for the U.S. economy. So the NABA is not just a panel of so-called, egghead experts, academics. It's not. These are industry participants. These are 38 professional forecasters who work inside of major companies who know what their company is experiencing. So the president of the NABE, the National Association of Business Economics, is currently the global chief economist at Ford Motor Company. Then you've got members from places like Wells Fargo and FedEx and others. They see things. They know what they're experiencing. They know why it will benefit them. They can forecast accordingly. Their forecasts are economic growth in the remainder of 24 and in 25, higher than previous projections. It says Ford is part of the 38 professional forecasters. They are seeing a 2.7% potential jump from September expectations. For 2025, they're looking at growth estimates of 2% from the initial 1.8, meaning it's going up from their original expectations. Here's the factors they claim. Moderating inflation, finally. More balanced risks. What does that mean? Less regulatory overburden. And then a Federal Reserve that's in easing mode. In other words, the Federal Reserve is finally cutting the rates. Where are the rates going to go? Why do the rates really matter? Well, the rates matter because people don't know whether to borrow money to buy a house, start a business, do the things necessary to put capital infusions into what they do. Policymakers, it says, expect interest rates to end the year around 4.4%. My gosh, that's better. Falling to 3.4% in 2025. My gosh, that's better. As for GDP, they expect 2% growth in GDP for next year. They also expect the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to be extended. It's due to expire in 2025, but 78% of the members of the panel expect an extension. None of them expect an expiration. I think this is an amazingly good forecast. Now, there's some things, though, that play in, like how will Trump overcome the damage that was done to our energy sector? Because that's a huge deal. Right now, we're looking at places in our nation, in this country, in the most first world of first world countries, that are looking at the potential for rolling blackouts. That is inexcusable. The only way that happens is if we overcommit ourselves to under or incapable systems. Grid sustainability is a huge deal, and you have to reach what's called baseline load. Baseline load is the minimum amount it takes to keep a part of the grid active and engaged, especially when you get into peak. Look, I got all kinds of stuff on this, and then we'll have a conversation with the head of our PSC in Alabama coming up top of the hour. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm looking out the window. I can prove it. I mean, y'all, Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. By the way, if you're interested, you can stream the show live no matter where you are. We have great station affiliates that we're on, covering, big chunks of the North Alabama area. But you can always follow us online. And right now we are streaming. You can go to our Twitter feed, and we'd love it if you would. Go to our Twitter feed for @rightside_media, Or you can go to my personal one, at Sen, that's S-E-N, at Sen Phil Williams. Or you can go to our website, rightsidemedia.org, and click on the on-air portion and watch it live. You're also on YouTube, also on Rumble, also on Twitch. Have I forgotten one? Have I got it all?
You got all of them. There.
Dude. All right. Yeah, we're on all the places. And by the way, if you do go to YouTube or one of the others like Rumble, we'd appreciate if you click subscribe because that actually helps us as a business because Right Side Radio is only one part of what we do. Right Side Media is the company. And we do written stuff. We do podcasts. We do the radio show. We got it all. So we would love to have y'all help us grow. Anyway, check it out. Okay, I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper, keeping the lights on. You know, it gets hard. It gets hard when you got Democrats in charge, right? So California, you just want to look at it and go, bless their hearts. But California right now is staring at a new study by University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. So this is Dateline last Wednesday. One of their, I believe this is a state senator from California who put this out, that Gavin Newsom has new gas regulations that could force Californians to pay up to 90 cents more per gallon of regular fuel in 2025. 90 cents more per gallon. What? Like, they don't already have the most expensive gas in the nation, right? Says a staggering increase includes the recent 65-cent gas price hike, mandates to withhold gasoline supplies from the market, and refinery closures caused by overregulation. So they're shutting down refineries. They're limiting availability to the market for reasons that are just purely to drive people towards renewables. By the way, they're not renewable. They're not renewable, and they're not sustainable. Just call it what it is. How about non-petroleum products? Just say that. It's not renewable. Well, we get to reuse the battery over and over again for a while. Guess what? I get to use my combustion engine over and over again, too, when I fill it up with gas and change the oil. It says, for the average Californian driving a gas-powered car, these costly policies will cost an additional $600 to $1,000 in pre-tax income just to even break even. Gavin Newsom is punishing low- and middle-income families for driving a gas car. Meanwhile, wealthy elites can easily afford the price increases or can buy an electric car to sidestep Newsom's price gouging. So that's the kind of thing that happens in the energy sector when Democrats are in charge. But let's talk about how this has impacted us in general. So I've got a piece here from a website called Bidenomics.com. By the way, I just wrote a new op-ed. Some of this is included in that op-ed that came out today. 1819 always gets the first run at my written op-eds. They come out every week. They're on Mondays. And so it is up now. Is it already? It's already been published. I know. Mm-hmm. 1819 has.
It's up on
Our website.
It's on your Twitter as well if they want to go check it out.
Absolutely. So some of this information is in there. But how about this? According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, since Joe Biden entered office, energy costs are up 39%. Just since Joe took office, we're paying 39% more overall for our energy. That's, look, folks, that is unconscionable. All right, so home heating oil, luckily we don't do much of that in the South, but still, especially in the North and Northeast, they do a lot of that. Home heating oil is up 44%. Can you imagine living in a climate like Maine or New York State, upstate New York, where they have those epic snows every year, especially the lake-driven snow off of Buffalo, but you got home heating oil costs that are now 44% more expensive. Gasoline up 48%. Electricity up 29%. So if you're like us, natural gas, 27% more expensive. Unlike other goods, it says energy is a necessity for most people. Economists would say it's called an inelastic, which means that when energy prices go up, there won't be a drop-off in demand. People will continue to buy it. They have no choice. If you want to turn the lights on, if you want to run the computer to do your job, if you want to charge your phone because that's connectivity, if you want to cook your food, any number of things, if you just want to heat your house, you're paying more for life. That's where we are. It says the wealthy pay a much larger share of their income on energy than poor people. That's why high energy prices are so insidious, because they really hurt the poor and those on fixed incomes. Yeah, this is what they call a regressive tax. This is a regressive tax, meaning that everybody pays it, but it hits the lower income the hardest because they have no choice but to have it. It's just unbelievable. And this whole article from Bidenomics.com is sickeningly fascinating. I just say that because you're looking at all the things that have happened. Well, what does that do to our overall costs? When energy scales up, guess what it does to everything else? Well, suddenly to run the combines and the tractors and the plows and the harvesters on the row crop farms where we get our food, guess what? Fuel costs go up. Farm to market costs to us go up. Guess what it does to bacon? It goes up. Guess what it does to get toilet paper? It goes up. Guess what it does to get anything for that matter? It goes up. The shipping of goods. If you need something from Amazon shipped to your house, I'll save the money. I won't drive to Target or to Walmart to buy it. Okay, great. You ordered on Amazon. That's fine. Guess what? They have to ship it. Shipping costs just went up because it costs more to ship. The reality is so much of our entire economy is tied to the energy sector. Okay, can we do things like Keystone Pipeline? What can we get that back on order? Maybe. How about this? Townhall.com. Dateline today. The Keystone Pipeline is back once Trump retakes office, but there's a problem. Trump has already said he wants to reinstitute it. It was so Barack Obama pretty much tried to kill it. Then, Trump brought it back and started putting it in place. And then Joe Biden killed it again. That's one of the first things he did, by the way. Killed the XL pipeline on first day in office to shut it down. Never mind that it had been approved. Never mind that it had gone through all the regulatory burdens and hurdles. Never mind that there was massive amounts of investment in it. That's okay. He's going to kill it. Why? Because the green activists told him to. Well, so this tug of war back and forth. Townhall.com reports that, Trump does want to restart it. However, the company that was building it no longer wants to be a part of it. Why would that be? Well, why would you? You're in the private sector. You owe a duty to your shareholders. You're supposed to make a profit. And you've already invested billions in building something that keeps getting shut down because somebody's got an arbitrary idea and they just shut it down out of a pure agenda-driven spite. What does that do to us? Energy costs go up because we can't transport energy in a more effective manner. Okay, so where are we on all this? I mean, costs are up under Biden. The ability to process and develop new energy is apparently down. But is there a risk of us, actually having a problem? I bring you justthenews.com. Dateline, Saturday. You ready? A new report by the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. That's a real organization, North American Electric Reliability Corporation, which assesses the U.S. and Canada's grid reliability, finds that much of central and eastern U.S. could experience blackouts should we experience a lasting cold snap this winter. Oh. So we talk about baseline load a minute ago. Baseline load is when you have the ability to meet baseline demands. You got to know what your rough baseline load is, and it fluctuates. But baseline load then has spikes. It has peaks. And when you hit peak capacity, you have to increase the ability to produce or you wind up having rolling blackouts. Electricity supplies are at risk from freezing temperatures that threaten reliable operation of bulk power systems and generators, fuel supply issues for natural gas-fired generation, and wind and solar resource energy limitations, says the report. Okay, blah, 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 blah. What it's basically saying is all these things are at risk because they have been overly green energy developed or shut down. NERC says they've been warning for years that increased reliance on unreliable wind and solar threatens the grid reliability. The areas of greatest risk for blackouts are those where coal and natural fire gas plants have been taken offline. Why have they been taken offline? Well, they're not environmentally sound. Sure, that's all of it. Because everybody knows that scraping the earth for lithium so we can build batteries for EVs using slave labor from a third world country is always better for the economy. Oh, and by the way, better for the environment. Anyway, there's two areas of the nation, especially. 15 states in the Midwest and Great Plains, even down to South Central, which I believe in Oklahoma, are under what's called the MISO, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operators. They are down 5 gigawatts from last year, and they warn that a cold snap could cause a serious problem. Southwest Power Pool, which covers a part of the Great Plains, lost 4 gigawatts of generation capacity. Half of that is because they were forced to do wind and solar increases to their portfolio. And then you got natural gas producers disputing this, saying this is not as bad as they say it is. Well, I got news. It just is. It is because we're looking at green energy farcical regulatory burdens being placed upon our systems. And we all know what our bills are every month. And we all see them going up. Listen, when Charlene and I built our house a few years ago, one of the things that I spent more on was the insulation. We did spray foam insulation in our house. I will never regret it. I am shocked at how well it helps insulate and how much money we have saved in our house because we did this spray foam insulation throughout the entire thing. I cannot imagine what it would have been otherwise. But I still see our prices going up. And it's just the two of us that live there. I still see our prices growing up. What are you doing?
Well, what was it you mentioned to me a while back? This is regarding how much lumber would have costed now if you decided to build your house now instead of then. Like, it's just prices on everything are going up like crazy. And I know Democrats, at least the excuse I see them say is that this is a problem worldwide because of post-COVID and people are trying to keep us out of recession. Like, I'm not really buying that at all. You know, because when you have policies like shutting down the Keystone and doing all of that, it's not just because, oh, golly, the COVID, it's still hurting us. It's not an excuse anymore.
It's not. It's not at all. This has been an agenda-driven, and the only agenda, by the way, the only agenda that should be there is what is best for the American people. And so what they've done is they've put on this whole, we're trying to save you. It costs a little more, but we're going to save you in the long run. We're going to save your lives. No, we're going to save the planet. Okay.
Yeah. And also, I thought this was funny when you were talking about how wind is eco-friendly or whatever. I didn't even realize this until actually Trump on Joe Rogan's podcast is what I learned this from. But if you've ever been at the bottom of a windmill, it is a bird graveyard. It's like it's gross and they're an eyesore and they're unreliable. Like, it's, I don't know, the eco-friendly or whatever, unless you hate birds, I guess you can count them out of that. But
listen, I could tell you stories because I fought a wind farm that was going to build right here in the area, and they get a thing like a strobing effect when the sun's behind them, and it causes seizures in cows in the cow fields. You've got the womp womp effect of it that really irritates people. You've got the every once in a while you get a thing called blade throw. Think about that. Blades on those things are bigger than the wingspan of a 747.
Yeah.
And when one breaks loose while it's like a trebuchet, it just launches. It'll go for a quarter mile and then plant itself into somebody's house. And then the other one was ice throw. It's very common. It's very common for these things to develop ice on their blades, and then the ice breaks off. And again, like a trebuchet, it's like pumpkin chunking. You know, it just like slings that ice a quarter mile like a bowling ball, and it's obnoxious.
And they're an eyesore, big time.
And they're an eyesore. And I had more stuff I was going to share, but we're up against a break now. Let's go ahead and take a break. I'll come back and I'll tell you where we're headed with this, because you know what? Electricity rates in Alabama are actually pretty good by comparison to most of the nation. You know why? Because we're a friggin' red state, that's why. Because the red state, blue state thing, it's real, y'all. We are a different version of taking care of business as a red state. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, we will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're going to come up at the top of the hour. After the next break, we'll have Twinkle Cavanaugh. She's the president of the Public Service Commission. They are the body that regulates all of our utility providers here in the state of Alabama. And the interesting dynamic is I get frustrated at my power bill, even though, you know, it's you know, my house is well insulated and you know all that, but what I was surprised to find out, I did a review for today's show, because I didn't want to get on here and like say we're good or we're bad and they don't have something in my hand. So findenergy.com FindEnergy.com is a resource you can go to that compares states with their energy. The average electricity bill in Alabama is $172 a month. That's the average. The average electricity rate in Alabama is what they call 14.93 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay, just a little factoid for you. That actually puts us as the 30th lowest priced state in the country. Did not know that until today. In fact, I was prepared to be frustrated with this segment, and I got less frustrated when I read that. I'm still frustrated at what they've done to us because it doesn't have to be as bad as it is. But in terms of what it is, at least in Alabama, I will say this, Alabama has the 30th lowest priced rates for electricity in the country by average, 14.93 cents per kilowatt hour. The average state is 16.35 cents per kilowatt hour. The largest supplier, of course, in the state is Alabama Power, TVA being one of the other ones. And then we have a bunch of like rural electric co-ops. But even with all this happening, the Biden-Harris administration, according to the Free Beacon this past weekend, is now rushing to dish out another $25 billion in grants for green energy. Why would they do this? Did you know that we subsidize the so-called green energy sector? The government pays for $129 billion a year in subsidization. That's like grants. That's like tax cuts. That's like making their life easier because they can't do it on their own. Well, the Heritage Foundation came up with a great study recently. It just came out just like a month ago. It says why electricity prices are soaring in blue states. If you geek out on details, this one is there for you. It says many of the states with the most affordable electricity have avoided stringent renewable energy mandates. In other words, it's the states that have the best affordable energy cost prices for the consumer are the ones that are resisting all of these so-called renewables. They're instead relying heavily on traditional energy sources. Go figure. Texas and Ohio both have significant natural gas reserves, but Texas' push towards renewable energy has contributed to its own grid instability, which is crazy to me. It's Texas. Similarly, hydroelectric plays a major role in Washington State, and yet Washington State has problems with their rates. Why? Environmentalists get control of the process, and the agenda winds up driving the rates. Of the top 10 most expensive states for electricity, 8 of them are under Democrat control. Go figure. And the two exceptions are Alaska and New Hampshire, which are considered to be geographic anomalies, not because of their politics. Of the top 10 most affordable states, only one of them is considered a progressive state, Washington, and that's because they're also a geographic anomaly. So all I'm saying here is blue state equals green new steel, and your rates go up when liberals get in charge. We're going to talk to Twinkle Cavanaugh from the Public Service Commission here momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 3 on a Meatloaf Monday on Thanksgiving week. That's a great lineup. But yeah, we've been walking through the dippers for the day. I did the whole first section on truing up the vote and recognizing why some states take forever to count their votes, and it ain't all good. And then I spent the last little while here talking about what I called keeping the lights on. What does it take to keep the lights on? And oh, by the way, did you know that Alabama fares pretty well by comparison to other states, especially when you consider the red state versus blue state policies and the adoption of the green new steel kind of policies? We're more of an all-of-the-above state. Now, that being said, we're also a regulated state. Alabama's Public Service Commission, people don't often know it's even there, but it is probably one of the most important things in our state government to assist with making sure our bills stay where they need to stay. The commissioner that I'm bringing on right now is Commissioner Twinkle Andrus Cavanaugh. I've known her for over a decade, maybe longer. I mean, she's a wife, she's a mother, she's a small business owner. She's been the former chair of the Republican Party for the state of Alabama. She's been in and around state politics for any number of years. Graduate of Auburn University, lives in the Montgomery area. And she's been on the PSC now for a number of years, and she's on the phone. Twinkle Cavanaugh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Man, thanks for making time for us today.
Well, happy Thanksgiving. We have got a lot to be blessed, to be thankful for. We are so blessed as a country now that we're going to head in a new direction.
I heard that. You know, and I really hope that, and this is that's a great segue, thank you, but I really hope that what that means is we're going to see a change in some of the regulatory burdens that our energy sector has been dealing with.
You know, I believe there's going to be a very big change that we're going to see beginning on really day one. You remember the negative changes under President Biden. On day one, he killed the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see the opposite with President Trump on day one. He's made some great appointments when it comes to an all-of-the-above approach, meaning using all fuels, including, you know, the fossil fuels. But he is saying now that he's got two major priorities, the border, which I'm thrilled about that, but then his other priority that he says will be day one will be energy issues,
yeah.
And that is making us energy independent again. You know, Phil, I'm going to give you a quick example of something that I think is just crazy, but it points out what we've been dealing with over the last 4 years. When it comes to day one with President Biden, he killed the Keystone Pipeline.
Right.
That's 850,000 barrels of oil that would come from Canada down to our Gulf Coast refineries. Well, we still get that oil. It's just that now, instead of a pipeline going one way, you know, south, instead we either get it on a train or a tanker truck. Usually it's on a train, but that's 1,125 train cars daily going south.
Wow.
You've got to have all of those going back north to pick up in Canada again. So that's 2,250 train cars daily doing what one pipeline could do at a much less expensive cost to the consumer. So
no kidding.
Their policies make no sense. They're not green. You know, they talk about green. All they are is pulling green out of everybody's pocket, and that's what they want. They want fossil fuels to be so expensive that they're alternative fuels look like they are a good alternative, which monetarily right now they are not.
Oh, and that's okay. All right, this segment's over. I think that's all of it. No, that was perfect. You're so right.
Well,
I mean, I look at this. I call the Green New Deal the Green New Steal because all it does is take from us. That's all it does.
You know, I read your article this morning, and I thought, how fabulous. I wish I had thought of that language, because that is exactly what it is. It is taking money away from us that should be in our pockets. And one of the things that I talk about when I speak around the state is I ask people, you know, we're all worried about inflation. Inflation today is 21% more than it was 4 years ago.
Right.
You can talk about gasoline. You can talk about electricity. A lot of times we talk about food that's 24% higher. But when you come down to looking at energy, it affects everything. You know, a barrel of oil on President Trump's election day 4 years ago was trading at $42 a barrel.
Oh, wow.
Today, it's at almost $75 a barrel, which is a 78% increase. But at some points over the last 4 years, it's gone as high as $123. That's more than three times the amount that it was under President Trump in the end. And so you look at the price of a barrel of oil and you say, well, how does that affect me? And I'll tell you, if you get up in the morning, and I usually ask people, did you get up this morning and put some contacts in your eyes that are plastic, a byproduct of oil, or put on glasses that are plastic, byproduct of oil? Did you jump in the shower and use soap or shampoos, byproduct of oil? Did you go to the kitchen and turn on anything, your hairdryer, your dishwasher, anything, using electricity? You're using byproducts of oil there. Did you happen to eat a bowl of cereal? The fertilizer for those oats or wheat or whatever it might have been, that's a byproduct of oil. And then, you know, the farmer had to use his tractor. The farmer had to get the cereal to market. All of this is using oil. And so when a barrel of oil goes from $42 to today it being right at $75 a barrel, then obviously it's going to increase the cost of everything we do in life. And so there's no, you know, there's no rationale for oil being that price. We could be drilling more oil right here. We could loosen the permits here. We could be trading more. We could have our Keystone Pipeline. There are so many things that President Biden did to stop energy flowing, and that's what I love about President Trump, is that he sounds like he is going to get us back energy independent. The oil and the gas will be flowing, and hopefully we can keep more money in our own pocket.
Let me break in and ask you, though. Most people don't recognize what the PSC even is, for that matter, but we are roughly what I would call and all of the above state. I mean, I know for a fact that there's going to be some hydro, some wind, some solar. Really, hydro is not even considered the renewables, but the wind and solar in the portfolios of the various companies that you help regulate at the PSC. But what have you guys been seeing in terms of the policies and the regulatory burdens from DC on our energy providers? What have you been seeing about, you know, the mandates, and how has that changed things? And then what does the PSC do to interact with that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, Phil, for you and your listeners, what I think is the most important takeaway is that if you were to take away all of the mandates that have come from Washington over the last 25 years and take away all of the eco mandates, meaning things they've required of us, and the fact that they've made us turn most of our coal-fired units into natural gas-fired units, then now they've got a war on all fossil fuels. But if you take away all that the state of Alabama spends on meeting these mandates and changing with all of their regulations, we'd probably be paying less money today for our power and our natural gas than we were 25 years ago. But the reality is they have tried their best to, first, there was a war on coal, and then now it's a war on fossil fuels. And so it has made it very difficult. You're constantly jumping through hurdles in everything that we do. But at the Alabama Public Service Commission, we do regulate utilities. We regulate everything from power to gas to wastewater, some water. And we also do real-time insurance for trucking. We do pipeline inspections all across natural gas pipelines all across the state. And then we also do, real-time insurance for moving companies, 18-wheelers. We regulate Uber and Lyft. But one of the things I think we're most known for would be the regulation of Alabama Power Company. And they do have an all-of-the-above approach. But the thing that's made it the toughest is that natural gas and coal are your baseload electricity production fuels,
right,
meaning you can turn them on whenever you need it and produce a vast amount of electricity for the consumer. The problem with some of these others, now nuclear is fantastic, but I just don't think you can get the permitting that you need to have more nuclear right now. You might could under Donald Trump, but it takes anywhere from 10 to 20 years to build a nuclear plant, and you've got to go through the hurdles of every new president. So it's gotten very, very tough to build a nuclear plant. Hydro is fantastic, but there's only so much water you can dam up and have hydro. And solar is just not baseload electricity, meaning you cannot power up the solar between 5 and 6:30 on a freezing cold winter morning in Alabama, and that's when we use the most power in any one moment in the state of Alabama is used on a cold morning between 5 and 6:30 a.m.
Wow.
Between 5 and 6:30, not 5:30, 5 and 6:30 a.m. And so it requires a baseload electricity that can always generate the electricity, and that a lot of that is fossil fuels, which the Biden administration, the current administration, has done everything to take the price up that we pay for those fossil fuels and make it more difficult to use those fossil fuels. Let me give you one example. Over the last 60 years, coal-fired plants have produced a coal ash, and they are housed in a coal ash pond,
right,
which is just you wet the pond to keep the coal ash in and not up. And so the EPA said under the Obama administration, you have a choice. You can cap it in place to make it safer, or you can haul it to another location. Well, President Biden has come in after Alabama Power Company has started the cap in place process, which takes years, and it also is very, very expensive. And our ADEM in Alabama approved what Obama also approved at the EPA. Then Biden came in and said, nope, nope, you're not going to be able to cap it in place. We're going to ask you to transport it to, basically a dump, a secure place. And so what I'd like to do is give people a picture of what that means.
Okay, that we got about a minute and a half to do that.
Okay, 21 million cubic yards of coal. And so that would mean every 3.5 minutes for the next 33 years, every 3.5 minutes for the next 33 years, a truck would be going from the coal ash pond to take it to another dump site. It makes no sense environmentally. It makes no sense economically. But once again, it's another bad policy that causes causes problems for us here in America. And that's what I'm so glad to see. We're getting released from out from under that now. And Donald Trump will come in and hopefully his energy policy will change what we're seeing in Alabama and across our country.
Well, I knew you would have some input. I knew you would.
Oh, yes. And, I've become an energy nerd, Phil. I love it, but
well,
I also
so.
Have been so frustrated.
Well, and the last 4 years, I mean, I can't imagine being on the PSC at a time when it felt like everything about energy production was under attack. But truth be told, we got a great study, and I got to wrap it here, Twinkle, but we got a great study the Heritage Organization just did that shows the difference between what red state policies and blue state policies do to energy production and energy costs for the consumer. But in the meantime, listen, I want to keep you on speed dial because as this thing develops, I may want to get your input again later on as the Trump administration changes our the lay of our land, okay?
You call me anytime, and I hope you and your listeners have a very happy Thanksgiving, and our best days are yet to come.
I appreciate that. Thanks. That's Twinkle Kavanaugh.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Twinkle. That's Twinkle Kavanaugh. She is the one of the commissioners, and I believe she's actually the president at the Public Service Commission. She's basically the one overseeing, or one of the ones overseeing any rate increases, rate decreases, or for that matter, a lot of other things that I didn't even know she did all that stuff. More to come. I'll wrap this thing when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just closing out this section on keeping the lights on. I knew that Twinkle Kavanaugh would have some input. I mean, listen, that woman, like, just breathes this stuff every single day. And she's been on the PSC now, I want to say, for like 10 years. But listen, so here's the thing. If you're looking at whether or not, forcing the use of renewables is going to save us money in the long run, let me just refer you to California. I know. It's always California. Why is it always going to be California? Because they are just ate up because jackassery runs rampant in the state capital in California.
They're the state of jackassery.
They are the state of jackassery. They are an epic level of cacistocracy. There is a whole lot of codswallop coming out of that place. It's just unbelievable.
Change the bear on their flag to a donkey. I think that would be pretty fair.
That'll work. So this piece from Heritage that I told you about, the study I told you that compares red states and blue states, it says California has the most exorbitant electricity prices because of, not in spite of, renewables. Says that 30% of installed, that's their grid capacity, 30% of their grid is now solar, and it demands an overabundance of heavily subsidized electricity in the middle of the day. In other words, it drives down the price of electricity for all energy producers a little bit, and then it goes right back up. Says that means that baseload generators must operate at a loss for certain parts of the day, making it increasingly difficult for them to recoup costs. This is why solar keeps getting dumped on the grid during the day. And then, by the way, if you have bad weather, solar can't help you plus back up. Here's the thing. We are right now projected at current rates to subsidize the green energy sector. Subsidize. That means they can't do it on their own. We got to keep them in business with government tax dollars. That means it's like if McDonald's was making burgers, but it wasn't as good as Burger King, so the government gave McDonald's some money to help plus them up so they'd be level with Burger King. That's not the way it's supposed to work. If Chick-fil-A did an experiment in chicken sandwiches and it failed, it would be because the market didn't sustain it. But right now what we're looking at is in the renewable energy sector, the government props them up. So the government is projected right now to spend $1.2 trillion more dollars under current spend over the next 10 years subsidizing the green energy sector. And by the way, it points out here in this deep dive from the Heritage Foundation, it says renewable energy is a cheap claim, does not account for the costs of what's known as specialized dispatchable power. What is that? That means when they can't sustain the grid during the day because the renewables can't satisfy demand, dispatchable power is when you have to ramp something else up to cover the demand load. Where's that going to be? Coal, nuclear, and natural gas. So all I'm saying here is it works as a piece. It does not work as the push. Do not make it all that they say it is because it won't be there when you need it. Not yet anyway. Just costs more. We're coming right back. We're changing gears. Race baiters and charlatans. Oh, you're going to enjoy this one. Just prepare to get mad. Don't swerve while you're driving. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama, y'all, Alabama. And I mean to say, this show goes like, whoo, way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, I got a ton of text messages. I will do what I can to get to some of those. We just had so much content that I had to keep unpacking, but I got to jump into this third dipper because it's a hoot, man. It's just a hoot. So, total change of subject. We've talked about True the Vote today. We talked about keeping the lights on. Dipper number three. Let's talk about some of those race baiters and charlatans. Pray tell, Phil, what do you mean? I mean the people who get out there and they say that race is all that matters. They're race baiters. They're charlatans. Charlatans because they claim that they need to get their way because of race. They're race baiters because they use it to incite the conversation, to help push people to something that they might not otherwise need to get involved in. Case in point, the ladies of The View. Wow. I mean, you look at that show and you think, oh, gosh, I wonder if they're going to make any changes. I wonder if they're going to, do you think they are?
No chance. Yeah. they've gone way too far in. There's no turning back.
They are just what they are, and that's all there is, you're saying?
Yeah, they've gone way too far.
Well, okay. Just so you know, the interesting thing, though, I think is it's kind of a hoot. I think they've begun to see the light a little bit. They keep having to read out legal notes. They call them legal notes. You know what that is?
Yeah. So that's their producers making them do that. You know, you can
darn
see
right
them,
it is.
You can see them physically cringe every time they have to do one.
It's to the point that they're starting to get mad.
Yes.
They get frustrated. I'm just going to call this a legal note show, says Joy Behar. Sunny Hostin, who, by the way, used to be a prosecutor. She's got a law degree. You think she'd know better? She doesn't. She doesn't know better at all. In one segment, she was required on air to stop what she was doing. They had to stop the dialogue, and she had to read out prepared comments given to her by the attorneys in the background. They're literally texting them while they're on the show. and this is how it keeps going. Joy Behar go, 1 minute, I just got a note. Okay, we got to clarify something about Santos. So in one show, they did something about George Santos, the kind of disgraced former Republican congressman. And it was wrong, and they had to clarify it. Then they did something about Matt Gaetz, and it was wrong, so they had to clarify it. Then they did something about Pete Hegseth, and it was wrong, so they had to clarify it. Why? Because they keep going into all of the DEI versions of what they believe the world looks like. All right. Here's why I think some things are changing. Number one, because The View's having to read legal notes now. I don't recall that before. If they did, no. I don't recall it.
Nope.
The other thing is this. Top Democrat Hakeem Jeffries. I got to give props, man. Hakeem Jeffries called out the ladies of The View the next day. So the ladies of The View on the 22nd on Friday went into all these things they had to do legal notes on, right? And then they started doing the whole, you know, racism and misogyny is the reason why Trump won. Racism and misogyny. Hakeem Jeffries himself, the leader of the House Democrats, the guy who was in line to be Speaker of the House if Democrats got a majority, He actually came out and called them out. He pushed back on them saying, you cannot say that Donald Trump went won because of anything except the fact that he promised to fix the economy. Wow.
Props.
That's from townhall.com, a respected conservative source. Top Democrat leader put the ladies of the View's remarks to bed after they suggested that racism and misogyny cost Vice President Kamala Harris the election. Jeffries dismissed the progressive panel's accusations and admitted that the health of the economy matters a lot more to Americans than the color of someone's skin. I'm actually taken aback by this. That's a clear indication they recognize they can't always get away with a lie anymore. And the ladies of the View haven't caught up with it yet.
By the way, I don't know how old this clip is, but have you seen the clip of Sunny Hostin doing a heritage, like a genetics test or whatever, and finding out that she comes from slave owners?
Yes. there's apparently slave owners in her. Yes.
I wonder if she's going to pay reparations or...
Darn right.
Yeah.
In fact, wait a minute. She's part black. Does that mean she gets reparations and has to return them? How does that work? I mean, what do you do with that?
Her face of, you know, after spewing all the nonsense she has, it was great. I saw that clip for the first time today. It was great.
Speaking of which, let's go to audio clips. And I'm going to call for audio clip number two, all right? This is Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, who is an absolute nut job. She's a Democrat from Texas. She's one of these kind of prima donna ladies who want you to know she's all that. She's all that. She's important. Don't you understand who I am? I mean, I have more than once seen a clip of her making sure that she touts her own credentials before she, you know, gives her comments. But she went on a anti-white racist rant the other day, claiming that there's no way in the world anybody with skin other than black can understand what oppression is, and they really don't even have the right to talk about it. And yet, then you have to look at Sunny Hostin and you go, okay, but she's only part black. Does that mean that you have to yell at half of her? I don't understand how that works. It's ridiculous. Go ahead and play that clip from Jasmine Crockett.
Don't let it escape you.
Golly.
That it is white men on this side of the aisle telling us, people of color on this side of the aisle.
It's a congresswoman.
That y'all are the ones being oppressed. That y'all are the ones that are being harmed. That's not the definition of oppression. You tell me the prolonged, cruel, or unjust treatment that you've had, and we can have a conversation.
You could start with Exodus.
The reality is that when it comes to financial performance, companies with more diverse workforces are more likely to outperform their competitors. Companies in the top quartile for racial diversity are 35% more likely to outperform their peers on profitability. Companies with diverse executive teams are 25% more likely to generate greater profits. Diverse companies earn 2.5 times higher cash flow per employee.
Now, she's reading from diversity a script, work. By the way. She's reading from a script that has actually been discredited. It was from a biased source. Shoot, the name just escaped me. I'll come back to it in a minute. But the sourcing of her stats was actually discredited. And the interesting dynamic here is she never once allows for the idea that meritocracy is what creates, you know, economic well-being. That there's no way in the world. You have to hire people based on what she considers to be diversity. And this is right after she just chewed out every white person on the panel for daring to have an opinion about something that she says they should have no right to an opinion on because of their heritage. Listen, the idea that some of these people get elected to Congress is just antithetical to common sense. It is kakistocracy. Kakistocracy being the governance by the least qualified of our citizens. What, you're dying to say something, I can tell. What do you got?
I love Representative Higgins. You can start with Exodus.
Yeah, he was the one in the background. Yeah. Yes. You can start with Exodus. Yeah. That's
it's so right.
It's so right. But all that to say, they are absolutely determined to continue pressing forward on the idea that DEI is needed, despite the fact that we can find at every turn that when you focus on hiring based upon demographics first, productivity actually goes down. Morale goes down. It's not hard, y'all. And I am literally, here's the thing. They've got it flipped. The laws already prevent you from not hiring someone based on their race. In other words, if two qualified candidates come in, One of them is the most qualified and they happen to be black and you choose not to hire them, you run the risk that they can then sue for discriminatory hiring processes because you did not hire them, like you excluded them on their skin color. By the converse, though, they demand, like Jasmine Crockett, they demand that we hire based on skin color. You can't just suddenly say racism is bad unless it's to benefit a race. Well, that's called racism. This is true race baiting and charlatanism right here. This is claiming that what you did over here that we saw was wrong, and oh, by the way, the laws are in place to prevent it, is going to be best prevented by doing more wrong. It doesn't work that way. You don't do equity. Equity is where you distribute so that everybody gets an equal share. It doesn't work that way. What you do is you push for equality, where no one is left out of the opportunities. Well, the only way you can do that is to hire them. No, it's not. The only way you can do that is to create the environment where people are not discriminated against as opposed to being discriminated for.
And it's DEI in general is so inherently racist because you're saying that minorities need the help. They can't do it on their own.
It's insulting.
They can't meet up to the standards. They need the bar to be lowered so that they can reach that. It's inherently racist, you know, the whole premise of DEI.
And yet, clip number one, Congresswoman Summer Lee believes, and she's a Democrat from Pennsylvania, she absolutely believes that we have to keep DEI in place. Go ahead.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion programs only exist to band-aid over decades, hell, centuries of discrimination against people's skin color, their religion, disabilities, gender, or sexual orientations, you name it. Contrary to Republican conjecture, remedying past discrimination is not, in turn, a discrimination. And we're not going to sit here and pretend racism is over just because one black person on the Supreme Court agreed that it should be.
Oh, hang on a second. Stop. Pause. Did you catch that? The fact that Justice Thomas is black makes her mad because he didn't toe the party line. Keep playing.
EI does not do is give some kind of magical pass to better jobs like some of our colleagues are implying.
Okay, I got news. Yes, it does. There's no implying. It's a statement of fact. If you give someone a job they're not otherwise qualified for simply because you looked at their demographics, I don't care. It's wrong. That's not the way it's supposed to be. If someone who is white, black, Asian, or whatever is the most qualified person and you discriminate against them in favor of someone else purely on skin color basis, then the best person did not get the job. Hello, Ketanji Brown Jackson, justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. Ketanji Brown Jackson is a brilliant woman. She's an accomplished jurist. She is someone who has a right to be considered for the Supreme Court. I agree. All of that. I agree. Every bit of that. Guess what? She will always have an asterisk by her name. Why? Because the very first thing that President Biden said he would do is find a black woman to put on the court. His words, not mine. He will find a black woman to put on the Supreme Court. What does that tell you? That a number of accomplished jurists were never going to be considered. The only person who could win would be a black woman. Does that mean we got the most accomplished member of the Supreme Court? We'll never know. She has an asterisk by her name at this point.
Same with Kamala Harris.
Same with Kamala Harris. They were trying to reach a demographic glass ceiling breaker. And what did they do? They got Kamala Harris, who no one voted for ever until they thrust her in the position of being the only thing left. Well, I got a little more on this. I'm not sure I'll get all of it in. It was a nice little rant. but the truth be told, DEI has got a DIE. We got to get rid of this stuff. And I am, by the way, I am not in favor of racial tendencies of any stripe. I want them gone. They should be out of our lexicon. But if the truth be told, until you get back to hiring the best candidates for the job, you will never have the best candidates for the job. Makes sense. Take me to a break, brother. We'll take that break right now. If I get back and have time, I might tell you a little bit about the Pete Hegseth tattoo controversy. Then again, I got a ton of your text messages I need to get to also. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I know we picked up some more followers today on social media. We appreciate you guys doing that. And if you're ever watching us streaming live online, we would also appreciate it if you would click subscribe on whichever platform you're on, whether it be Rumble or YouTube or for that matter, our social media. Just everything like that is a part of what we're doing to drive our numbers in the right direction so that we can then do more as a business, because you'd be amazed. They all have gates you have to pass through. And as we have just hit a new growth mode, part of that is our online capabilities here at Right Side, and you guys are the key to that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, let's build up that Twitter. I know that's one we've been wanting to build up significantly. And, I mean, I'm not trying to get my hopes up, but I think we're on pace to maybe get to 1,000 subscribers before the year's over.
Come on.
But let's keep that momentum going.
It should. And I, you know what? It begins to cascade at that point, too,
yeah,
at some point.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm going to jump on text messages. Let me do that. Mike from Florence. I'm not sure which she he's talking about, but should I even read that one? Maybe I shouldn't.
You can't.
Okay, I can't. I will not read that one. Thank you very much. Mike from Florence. Thank you not very much. All right. John from Huntsville says, Phil gets an A+ for his fantastic performance. Twinkle Cavanaugh gets an A++, outstanding for her spectacular performance, which means today's winner is obviously JP with a perfect A++. There you go. Congratulations. Shout out to my new favorite NFL quarterback, Bo Nix, for leading my Denver Broncos to their 7th win of the season and War Eagle.
Man, Bo Nix just carved up my Falcons 2 weeks ago. It was ugly.
Just Bo Nix just proving that he actually can be a legacy quarterback, I guess.
He fits in Sean Payton's system for sure, so he's doing well.
Well, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Mike from Coxie, Alabama, says, the problem with the woke left is they don't even realize they don't know how much they don't know. That is so true. That is so, and what you know what's crazy too, Mike, is how many times they self-own themselves, like the ladies on The View. They self-own on a regular basis. Wait, I'm sorry, I've got another legal disclaimer I have to read. Self-own.
By the way, have you mentioned MSNBC selling?
I have not, because right now all it is like a buzz. There's no there's no real overtone. There's like a what if that happened kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Elon Musk has been a having a field day tweeting about how he's going to buy it just to piss liberals off. He's not going to buy it, but he's making them mad.
And I saw, too, I think it was pretty funny that there was a tweet. I don't know if you've been following it, but Justine Bateman, who was a child star back in the day,
yeah,
and she has turned out to be quite a conservative, and she's great on social media. She's hilarious. But Justine Bateman just said the other day, NBC needs to do some realigning of The View, and put her on, and she would take the role. And then and on top of that, Patricia Heaton, who played in Everybody Loves Raymond so many years, she's a conservative. She came on and said, I'll join you. So I'm thinking, this is a thing. We could do this.
Turn it conservative.
Kenneth from Somerville says, and yet Alabama continues to model in-state departments like ADEM after California. Look for Alabama to model its education department after California when the federal government education department closes. I don't think so. I don't think they will at all. Kenneth, I disagree with that one, man. Absolutely. I don't think our education department's going to model itself into California. Monitor what? We're already a school choice state. Bam, we're different right there on the spot. James from St. Clair County says, over 5 years ago, the war on coal forced me to start traveling for power plant jobs and eventually get out of the maintenance game altogether. Now I'm into hazmat and working on my CDL. I believe it, man. And, the war on coal has also driven our rates up. John C. from Madison said, I did notice that blue states haven't found warehouses full of uncounted ballots. It seems like the ballot counting people are being more careful this time. It does. It's amazing. Badger from Athens said, everything I have read also said that those wind turbine blades are not recyclable. And that is not a joke. You are correct. Don from Jackson County says, come on, Phil, just put on a sweater. Sincerely, Jimmy Carter. I'd forgotten about that. Jimmy Carter did most I should have kept that story. I got to pull that back up. Jimmy Carter most famously said during the rate increases, they could just put on a sweater. What a stupid thing to say.
That's incredibly stupid.
That's incredibly stupid to say. Brent from Pell City said, our state legislature has closed DEI offices in our universities. Alabama Power has a diversity and inclusion team who conducts regular DEI training for their employees. Alabama Power is applying some agenda-driven policies. Yeah, and I'm concerned about that. I don't know what to say about that. And I have got friends that work there, and I'm curious how that's going to go. Brian from Huntsville says, why do presidents pardon turkeys? Have the turkeys been convicted of federal crimes? I'm going to raise a turkey and name it Eric Holder, and I bet it gets pardoned. Wow. Wow. And then Jim from Grove Oak says, happy Monday, Colonel. Did you hear about our State Department spending money on mental health programs for sad employees? Jackassery if there ever was. Yes, indeed, Jim. You are correct. All right. What an amazing show. Listen, you guys, it's going to be a short week for Thanksgiving, but we're with you. We're with you. Let's get her done. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, reminding you there are more of us than there are of them. And oh, by the way, God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.